After the Alabama Senate race and another failure on Obamacare repeal and replace, the Republican establishment is on the ropes. We'll talk about it on The Uprising.
LibertyNation.com. They're the resistance, but we are The Uprising with Scott Cosenza and Tim Donner.
There's not going to be a President Donald Trump.
Hey, a president. Can you believe it?
I love the poorly educated.
The voters have guaranteed themselves slavery, economic disaster.
I can't believe I'm losing to this guy.
You could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables.
Lordy, I hope there are tapes.
I have never met with Russians.
Putin is continuing to advance into Korea.
Gee, it's amazing that the Russians have been able to influence four special elections.
This is The Uprising, the podcast of LibertyNation.com. Tim Donner with you this week. Well, the firebrand populist Judge Roy Moore won a landslide victory this week in the race for the Alabama Republican Senate nomination over the establishment candidate Luther Strange. And Senate Republicans failed again to close the deal on repealing and replacing Obamacare. So now, do we have any confidence the GOP will be able to pass meaningful tax reform? Joining us to discuss the continuing decline of the D.C. Republican Party is Graham Noble, political correspondent for LibertyNation.com. And Graham, Judge Moore is, to say the least, a controversial figure who was removed once and suspended another time and might be removed again from his position as Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court. And he spent just a couple of million dollars gathered in small increments from the people of Alabama compared to the many millions which poured in from outside the state in support of the establishment candidate, Mr. Strange. What do you think Moore's lopsided victory signals about the political climate as we head towards next year's midterm elections?
Well, Tim, I would say that it's par for the course, if you will. I think it reflects the fact that the Republican base, you know, conservatives and libertarians who do vote Republican, are moving towards a more anti-establishment position. I think the Republican establishment is as you said, it's on the ropes, really. I think people are tired of their games and their failures. And I think, really, if this victory for Roy Moore in the primary is if it represents a defeat for anybody, it certainly doesn't represent a defeat for the president. It represents a defeat for the Senate Leadership Committee that poured, I believe, some $9 million into Luther Strange's campaign. And obviously, that was just money that they basically frittered away for no reason.
Well, of course, it's a direct repudiation of Senator Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, who really had a lot of money invested and a lot of his own reputation invested in Luther Strange candidacy, and yet he lost by 10 points. So this has got to be a shot across the bow. Now we're seeing some moderate Republicans, some would call them rhinos, Republicans in name only, legitimately or not, who are starting to bail, like Senator Corker of Tennessee, who says he's not going to run for re-election. What is it about these moderate Republicans that when things take a turn to the right, as they are prone to do when Republicans are in power, they'd rather cut and run than actually adapt to the times?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with the entire increasing polarization of the country. We have a situation that there are so many both Democrats and Republicans that I come across now who actually say that it is increasingly difficult to see any real difference between the two parties. And I think that's actually becoming a problem. I mean, people like to talk about partisanship and, you know, reaching across the aisle, and we've all got to work together. But I think more and more the American people on both sides of the political divide, they don't want that. They're not interested in that. They have, you know, whether they consider themselves liberals or progressives or conservatives or libertarians or whatever, People have political ideals. They have an ideology and they expect their respective parties to represent that ideology. And certainly on the right side of the political spectrum right now, the Republican Party does not reflect the ideology of most conservatives, and it certainly doesn't reflect the ideology of most libertarians. So I think they've got a real problem. Moderates are becoming actually less popular, and I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing.
Indeed not. I mean, the Democrats are good at standing together and quashing dissent in their ranks, whereas the Republicans can't seem to agree on what time the sunrise is. And some of that's exaggerated with the very difficult task of reforming the healthcare system. I mean, we saw how difficult it was for Democrats to turn the ship around, and now Republicans have failed, at least for now. I don't want to focus on Alabama too much, but we talked about this on LNTV, and I've asked many people this and haven't really gotten a satisfactory answer regarding the Alabama race. I mean, the natural ally of Trump would have been Roy Moore, the populist firebrand, or even Mo Brooks, who ran in the three-party pre-primary race back in June, who's also a rock-ribbed conservative. But of those three, the president chose to support the establishment candidate, Luther Strange. Do you have any idea why he would have done that when most of his supporters were backing either Mo Brooks and then later Roy Moore?
Well, Tim, it's an interesting question. I mean, first of all, I personally am a little disappointed that Mo Brooks kind of just faded away with barely a ripple on the surface of the race there. But I have said this before, and I still believe it. I think the only reason why Donald Trump injected himself into that race at all was almost as, if you like, a personal favor to Luther Strange. I believe that he did it because Luther Strange has been loyal to Donald Trump and his agenda in the past. And I think merely the president was rewarding him for that past loyalty. I don't think there was anything more to it. I honestly don't believe that Donald Trump believed that Luther Strange was going to win the primary. I don't think any reasonable observer would have believed that Strange was going to win that primary. He was only there to fill Jeff Sessions' seat until the election, you know, which is coming up in December. I don't think he was ever going to win. I think Trump knew he was never going to win. I think Trump is perfectly happy that Roy Moore has won. And I think Trump will very much throw his weight behind Roy Moore when the election comes up in December for that particular Senate seat. Well, but honestly, you know, I just don't think there was anything more to it than Trump rewarding Luther Strange for past loyalty.
Yeah, I'm thinking that if President Trump were to wear a T-shirt about the Alabama race, it might say, "I supported Luther Strange and all I got was this lousy landslide loser."
Yeah, nice alliteration there. Yeah,
I mean, so that was somewhat inexplicable, but I think your explanation is probably as good as any, and I think one would suspect that he sort of did a wink and a nod to Roy Moore, which is, hey, look, I got no problem with you. I had to do this for political purposes. Of course, he didn't get anything from Mitch McConnell in return because once again, the Republicans have failed. I've about lost track of how many times they've failed, like officially it's three, to pass the repeal and replace of Obamacare in the Senate that they've been promising for 7 years. So now they're hung out to dry. The president is talking about working with Democrats on this because he's proven that he'll work with anybody who gives him what he wants. I'm trying to think what the average person, maybe the average Trump voter or the average rank-and-file Republican, thinks of their own party when they've demonstrated such rank ineptitude, being given all of this power and able, at least so far, to do nothing with it.
Yeah, it is interesting actually to see the reaction of both Trump's base and also of those that other section of conservatives who was never really on board with Trump, because the latter group, of course, is now saying, you know, we told you so, and the former group, they invested so much in Trump and they threw their support behind him so enthusiastically that many of them seem reluctant now to express any disappointment that Obamacare has not been repealed, because what people wanted and what they were promised was a full repeal of Obamacare. And I don't believe that most outside of the Freedom Caucus and you know, the Rand Paul, Mike Lee, Ted Cruz types, I don't believe that any Republicans in Congress ever really wanted to tackle a full repeal of Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
And there are various reasons for that. But I don't believe that no matter what they promised, I don't believe they wanted it. Politicians by nature don't like to just scrap huge government programs anyway. They kind of have a natural aversion to it. And I don't believe that, you know, a full repeal was ever going to happen. And I still actually say that Obamacare will never somehow fully be repealed. We're going to be stuck with a lot of it for a long time to come yet.
And I think that President Obama knew that, and I think the Democrats knew that when they passed it by the slimmest of margins after twisting every possible arm in Washington back in 2010. They knew that even if it failed, and they had to know it would because it was a Rube Goldberg-type contraption that never made any sense, but they had to know that it would turn health care into essentially an entitlement, which, as we know, is almost impossible to reverse. But now, having, you know, failed to have their candidate, their sanctioned establishment candidate, Luther Strange, win and get his butt kicked in Alabama, and failing repeatedly on health care, now we turn to tax reform, and the GOP has now shown its hand. On the personal side, the announcement coming this week, they'll double the standard deduction that everyone gets. They'll collapse the 7 income tax brackets or rates down to 3, 15, 25, and 35 is what's being proposed. Plus the big item, corporate tax reduction, and we'll discuss that shortly. But first, Graham, how much would you expect such individual tax reform to affect the economy, or will it potentially bust the budget?
Well, I believe that, you know, if there's one, I guess I would generally describe myself as what they call a deficit hawk. I am very reluctant to see the federal government pass any kind of programs or any kind of reforms or enact any legislation that is going to negatively affect the deficit, that's going to grow the deficit or grow the national debt. However, my one exception to that is tax reform. I believe if tax reform is big enough and has sufficient impact, then, you know, personally, I'm willing to live with it adding to the deficit. I really am, because I think the long-term payoff is definitely worth it. I would like to see even bigger tax cuts than they're going for, but I think the ones they are going for are pretty good. It's actually a case where the wealthiest people are actually going to be paying a little more taxes because of this. And the reason is because state and local taxes that they will be paying, they will no longer be able to kind of offset that, if you like. And so therefore, they're going to end up paying, you know, net, their tax liability is going to be a little greater. And the people at the bottom end of the scale, even though the lowest tax bracket is actually rising slightly, this doubling of the standard deductions means that there's going to be a whole section of people taken out of that liability for to qualify for the bottom rate. Mm-hmm. So I think it's pretty good, and I think it will be good for the economy. It's not going to be good for the deficit, but I think the long-term payoff is worth it.
Well, neither of us are economists. However, I think we both know that the success of lowering tax rates depends on the economic growth that it stimulates. And I think we can agree that if this individual tax reform, tax reduction can stimulate growth of 3% or more, it will likely pay for itself. That's what's called trickle-down economics derisively, or supply-side economics more formally and among those who support it. But on the corporate side, it seems that that's where the biggest reform will take place. We now have one of the highest rates in the world, 35% for corporations. That would drop to 20% in this proposal, among the lowest in the world. Not the lowest, but competitive with the lowest. Is the corporate side where the serious juice, the serious interest, where the thought is that the serious difference that can be made is on the corporate side right now? And would it be better, do you think, to put the individual and corporate tax reform in the same bill or in separate bills?
I think it's probably going to end up all being lumped into the same bill. I personally am more in favor of a flat tax or a fair tax system. But I think the corporate rate, lowering that is incredibly important, because right now the United States is just not competitive at all with the rest of the world. And it's ridiculous. And also because of that, companies, big corporations that operate globally, that operate overseas, are keeping wealth out of this country because of our ridiculously high corporate tax rate. I've heard that Trump himself is not actually thrilled with this current proposal, because of course it's not like he sat down at the Resolute desk and got out a pen and wrote this himself.
Not exactly, right?
No, exactly. So because otherwise, within this plan, you'd see the word, sad a lot, and you'd see a lot of exclamation points all over the place.
And he'd tweet them all out.
And there'd probably be some references to, maybe we should tax the failing New York Times even more. I understand that Trump isn't thrilled with this. I think his initial idea of a 15% corporate rate was really what he should absolutely stick to his guns over. I think the fact that we're already now talking about 20% is a little dangerous, because uh-huh. that may mean we may end up with, 25%, 27%
right.
or something.
Right.
The corporate tax rate needs to be just, slashed severely, and it needs to be definitely under 20%.
Well, on this whole issue of economic growth being stimulated by tax reform and tax cuts, if you take it down to 15%, I guess the numbers crunchers are saying, well, you get an unacceptable loss of revenue, where at 20% you don't. But in fact, really, isn't this all a crapshoot? Nobody knows how people will respond. Nobody knows for sure how people will respond to having more money in their pockets. So the idea that 15% is a non-starter but 20% is really just kind of trying to read the tea leaves, isn't it?
Yeah, to a certain extent, I really believe it is. My personal way of looking at it is that the lower the corporate tax rate, the more attractive the United States becomes as a country to do business in, both, for everybody. And I believe it also stimulates the growth in smaller businesses being more willing to expand. I personally think there's really not a huge downside to having a very low corporate tax rate. But, then again, I'm not, unfortunately, in a position to make the final say on these things. But it is, to a certain extent, you're right, Tim. We don't know yet, because for a start, we don't know what either businesses or individuals will do with the more money that's in their pocket. Will they hoard it? Will they invest it? Will they spend it? Obviously, the best thing that we could hope for is they spend it. But, an awful lot of people in this country and an awful lot of businesses actually need to, if they had any sense, they would invest, they would save for the future. So it is, you're right, it's really a roll of the dice.
Yeah, I'm thinking back to when Obamacare was passed, a big, new, massive government entitlement, and they were trying to convince us and using the Congressional Budget Office to do so, that this massive new federal program would actually reduce the deficit. And everybody knew it wasn't true, but they went ahead and said it and claimed it anyway. And of course, now we see that it's anything but that. So that's why I really take these numbers and these projections with a grain of salt. It's like they say with economists, they're always wrong, but we still want to get their opinion anyway. let me wrap this up by asking you this. I mean, with the left engaged in a culture war, as evidenced by the spectacle of NFL players refusing to honor the American flag, and Republicans, as we've discussed, proving their ineptitude again with their repeated failures to close the deal on health care, slow as molasses on tax reform. I mean, who and what do people have to vote for in next year's midterm elections?
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see. I think both parties are in for shocks in different ways. I think the best thing the Republicans, and possibly the only thing the Republicans have got going for them right now, is that, you know, everybody's talking about the problems that the Republican Party has, but the Democratic Party is just flailing around with no direction whatsoever, with no platform whatsoever. The left is tearing itself apart because the radical left has now got so extreme that they're even going after moderate people who would have generally considered themselves, you know, kind of left of center liberals.
Right.
So I think no matter how bad things are going for the Republican Party, I think the Republican establishment is in for a nasty shock in the midterms. But ultimately, the way things stand right now, I believe if the midterms were tomorrow, the Republicans would come out of it with control of both houses.
The ultimate,
the Democrats are just nowhere.
Yeah, the ultimate lesser of two evils. And I think what I'm looking for, Graham, is one of the lowest turnouts for a midterm in modern history, because again, there's so little to choose from. But I thank you for joining us today. I appreciate it. Keep up your good work on libertynation.com.
Thank you, Tim. Have a good day.
Thank you, Graham Noble of libertynation.com. The man who's shaken up Europe as much as Trump has shaken up the U.S. is the leader of the Brexit movement, which led to England's dramatic, some would say earth-shattering, withdrawal from the European Union, Nigel Farage. And libertynation.com is bringing Nigel Farage to Washington, D.C. He makes his appearance on Thursday, October 12th. It promises to be a memorable evening. An evening with Nigel Farage, October 12th. Make your reservations now at libertynation.com, because seating is limited. I'm Tim Donner, and this is The Uprising, the podcast of libertynation.com.